the Empire Podcast this week, we solve our guest conundrum with the help of a very special mystery guest whose identity shall become clear throughout the podcast, mainly when I introduce them. All that and more on the Movie Podcast. I had a lovely time at the Harry Potter Studios tour last week, but hey guys, don't try the butterbeer. That stuff will kill you faster than a bullet. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I am joined by three colleagues. That's right, three colleagues of such lethal cunning. We're joined by the wonderful, soft, warm, loving, gentle, kind, naive, idealistic James Dyer is here. How are you, James?
I'm good, Chris. So you had butterbeer. Did you have the chilled, iced butterbeer, the slushy butterbeer, or did you have the sort of fizzy pop butterbeer? Which variant did you have?
I thought there was only one.
No.
You're
such a noob. Okay. No, you can get either version. I had a lot of both of them. I went to
Really?
Yeah, because I went to the Universal when they launched the Hogsmeade part of the park in LA, and they had free butterbeer for all, and I had so much butterbeer. I was, you know that episode of The Simpsons where he has some, and he's hallucinating, and it's all like turns into a weird sort of LSD trip. It was a lot like that.
Yeah.
But sugar
induced. Mysterioso de Nuestro Homer.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, that's what it's called. That's the name of the episode.
Mysterio.
El viaje misterioso de nuestro Homer. I might be missing out a word.
I told you I don't speak French.
Homer? Something like that.
Yeah.
What's happening? Why have we gone all Babelfish?
That's the name of the episode
how do
you
know
were talking
this?
About.
How can you name the episode?
Because it's a really famous episode.
With Johnny Cash.
With Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash.
As a fox.
I have no recollection. Oh, I remember the fox.
I don't remember this episode of The Simpsons.
Anyway, it's a really famous episode.
He goes to the chili eating contest.
Yeah, and he has too much chili.
Insanely hot chili and then he hallucinates.
I see what I've done wrong here. I introduced James first.
That was where you went wrong.
That's where I went wrong. So, also joining me this week, Helen O'Hara, our geek queen.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I also have a butterbear story, though.
Okay, good. Go for it.
So I went around the Harry Potter studio tour before it opened. It was amazing. They were still unpacking the Griffin skeleton and stuff like that. And they made a big deal at the time of saying, look, we are not going to have butterbeer. This is not like an immersive experience. This is like behind the scenes. This is not going to be a butterbeer sort of place. And then like 2 weeks later...
People are shooting up butterbeer in the air.
2 weeks later, I get this call going, yeah, you know, we said that to you and you put it in print. Yeah, we're going to have butterbeer. So they literally brought me back just to try the butterbeer because as a sort of apology for the inadvertent
misleading.
And
then you got hooked.
And now I shoot it up every single morning.
And then back in the night bus.
Yeah,
margarine wine. And someone else said to me on Twitter last week, lard gin, which sounds great. Butterbeer, I don't know. I don't know about butterbeer. But I will introduce the third member of our quartet. I'm the fourth, obviously. Ben Travis, how are you?
I'm good. I'm mainly good because I haven't just had a glass of butterbeer. Because I agree with you, Chris, that it, in actuality, it tastes kind of disgusting. It was it the fizzy
like
pop
it.
One? Because you have a bunch of fizzy pop and then a thick, like creamy foam layer on the top.
It's like an ice cream soda.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that combination.
It's frothy.
I think I'm kind of in between. I think it's great. I think it should be sold in shot glasses because that's about the maximum amount you can
actually drink.
That's
a good idea.
Right?
That's a good idea. See, does it taste as disgusting in the world
disgusting.
Of Harry Potter? It is. It's
awesome.
Butterscotchy.
It's just a lot. It's a lot.
It is very, very,
it's very,
very
sugary.
Sweet.
I'm pretty sure whilst drinking it, I was going to be the first person in the world to develop type 3 diabetes.
The magical kind.
Life goals. Hashtag life goals. And, you know, I had a great time at Harry Potter. So last week, my wife and I took my sister and my niece. Again, must clarify, two different people. We took them to the Harry Potter tour because my niece Alex is a big Harry Potter fan. And I want to give a special shout out to two members of staff at the tour, James and Freddie, both of whom listened to the podcast.
Yay.
And went out of their way to show us stuff and give us a bit of a guided tour. And that was really fun.
Did you capitalize on the podcast to get extra butterbeer?
I did.
Is this what you were doing?
No.
Shilled the podcast for your own sugary ends.
I remained stumm about the podcast. I remained very, very quiet. But
then you spoke. And they went, hang on a minute.
Yeah, one recognized my voice. And one had seen a tweet that I was going down there. So he was very, very helpful and very, very friendly. That was James. So thank you, James, for going out of your way. That was great. But that was after we'd had the butterbeer. And so, frankly, the only way was up from that point on. But it was great. I really enjoyed it. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of those movies, but it gave me a renewed insight into the world and made me want to revisit them. I certainly want to reread the books. I've been having an itch to reread the books
recently. So have I, actually. I've only ever read them once.
Read another book, James.
Well, 'tis my way. I don't really reread books.
That's true, yeah. You read them really, really slowly, but only
and
ever
then
once.
Never again.
Which is amazing because...
It's like there can be only one. I'm on a Highlander. Mm.
That you can reel off so much stuff about Dune. Oh, no, I've said it.
No, well, why would you say it?
No, actually, I am going to go on now, but not about that. I just mentioned Highlander, and actually that has reminded me of something. Have any of you seen the Renegade cut of Highlander 2?
No.
So I had never... I mean, I vaguely was aware, and I didn't really know what it was. That was a cut, because Highlander 2 is rubbish. And you see that once, you never want to see it again. Mm. But so Mulcahy went back and recut it, like, years and years and years ago. And changed the whole film and used extra footage and shot extra bits and totally changed it. So there's no mention of the planet Zeiss. They're not aliens. Like, it's completely, like, in keeping with the mythology. I think he's retconned the whole thing. The end fight is now, as it was originally shot, two separate fights. It makes a lot more sense. At the end, they don't swan off into outer space because, again, I can't emphasize this enough, no aliens. And it's okay.
Oh.
Like, the director's cut of Highlander 2 is not bad. I mean, it's not good, but it's not bad. And I was like, this is a game changer, because the quickening, like the original cut of this, is one of the worst mainstream movies ever released. And yet, this version of it, which is the version I think now, if you get it on Blu-ray, this is the version that exists, it's good. I mean, it's not good. It's okay. It's fine. It's watchable.
Steady on, James.
Yeah, let's not overstate this. But I'm just saying, if you want to get your Immortals on, you can do worse than revisit Highlander 2 in its current form.
Get your Immortals on, and you're not up for listening to Evanescence, then this is the way to do it, I guess.
Indeed. Oh, wait, or go back and watch the first one, which is obviously better. Or, ooh. This has given me a good idea.
Oh, no.
I watched every episode of the Highlander TV series and some of its spin-off, The Raven.
The Raven, yes.
And I could talk about that at length, but I won't. What I will do is I will save that for Terry on a very special future episode of the Pilot TV podcast when I shall banshee Highlander the series. I'm going to write myself a reminder.
That's amazing.
Absolutely. Save those thoughts for a form in which I will never listen to.
I used to watch those series when I lived in France, and the only watchable shows were bad imported American ones. I watched so much Dr. Quinn, Femme Medicine, I can't even tell you.
What's that? Is that Dragnet? What is that?
Yeah, it's Dragnet, Chris.
Oh, that's good.
Does the show The Raven have anything to do with the CBBC game show Raven, which featured a man who turns into a raven and challenges small children to obstacle courses?
It is not, nor is it so Raven either. It's just about a thief.
Ooh.
An immortal thief with a sword and a cop on the edge. He may not be on the edge. I think he was on the edge.
He was near the edge.
By the end, he was definitely on the edge. It didn't last very long. Highlander, the actual series, ran for ages, though. Mm. As you will find out in excruciating detail at some point on the other podcast.
Yes, I will find that out when I listen to that.
I hate you all.
All right, so I don't have a question.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forgot.
What?
So,
Should I ask you a question, Chris?
What? What's
the question? I've got to think of one. I don't have one, but I will think of one. Okay.
Really?
Okay.
No,
if my experience of watching you do a spot prize quiz on the live podcast is anything to go by, you won't think of a question.
Oh, yeah.
It's really not off the top of your head.
Those tend to involve me just swearing at the audience.
But at that point, we're doing live shows. We're doing a live show. Let's use this opportunity to plug our live show. So the 14th of September, we're doing a show at the London Podcast Festival. It's going to be live. We're in the Foo Fighters slot. We're closing the first or second weekend. One of the two things. Except we're not closing the weekend. We're closing Saturday night. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be brilliant. And we're on stage at 9 or 9.30. You think I would know these things.
But this is after my bedtime.
I know. Helen will be very, very grumpy and upset. And her PJs as well. But do come along. It's going to be a lot of fun. Go to www.because Felicity Kate on Twitter pointed out that I always say www and never the third W. So I'm at pains this week to say www.
There you go.
kingsplace.co.uk to get tickets. And if you buy tickets to three or more shows, because they have an incredible lineup, I believe James has a pithy little podcast there as well the day before. And you can get a discount. I think it's a 15% discount if you buy tickets to three or more shows. So do come along. It's going to be a lot of fun. And there you go. Let's plug over.
Okay, but, I've got a question.
Yes.
I've got a question. Okay.
Anyway, then what I was going to say was we give out spot prizes beforehand.
We do.
As an enticement and an inducement for people to get into the seats early so we can start the show on time. Spot prizes are usually pretty damn good.
There's
some real schlock in there as well, but some good stuff. And so what we do is we ask the audience questions. And James, who's very, very good. You're very good at extemporizing, but not so when it comes to movie questions, because it looks like all your knowledge just wipes from your mind.
I'm not good at coming up with questions on the spot. I need to pre-prepare my questions for people. Otherwise, it stresses me out. I end up saying, then I end up asking questions about Groot's parents, which I believe I did at the last one. It's just, it goes off the rails. They're either far too easy or more often than not, incredibly esoteric and impossible. And everyone just stares at me blank-faced.
You're more of like an explainy answer giver than a,
than a question asker.
Question asker.
It's true. It is true. But my question, which I'm going to ask you, is related to this. So.
I just think your BBC One daytime quiz show would be patronised with like an exclamation mark.
Yeah. I think you'll find, Chris, it's condescend. yeah. No, so the question is, so I listened to Alien 3 this week. I was telling you this a
bunch
of
times. Oh, yes, yes.
So Audible have done something slightly improbable. They've done a released a dramatization of the William Gibson original script for Alien 3, mm-hmm. which is a very different film
it's
to the one that David Fincher made.
One.
It's not that one. No, it's not that one. It was another treatment.
Oh, I thought
for
it was that
no,
one.
No.
That's the Vincent Ward one, right?
Yeah, that's the Vincent Ward one. So this is William Gibson's treatment of it. And it imagines that the alien queen, I won't spoil it, but the alien queen, there's eggs and aliens involved. That's not a huge spoiler. And there are two disputed military bodies, and the Sulaco ventures into hostile space and ends up at a space station. The company gets involved. Everyone gets involved. There's no exclusive rights for anyone. Sorry. I'm just quoting aliens randomly. No, but so the Lance Henriksen resumes the voice of Bishop in this, and Michael Biehn resumes the voice of Hicks, someone who is not Sigourney Weaver, does Ripley. But
she's barely in it.
She is barely in it. She's not in it very much at all. And I remember this because I read this screenplay when it went online years and years ago, and it was really interesting to listen to. Partly because it's a proper dramatization, so they've clearly reworked the screenplay for an audio only format. So there's an awful lot of slightly awkward, like, we're entering the room. I'm looking around. I can see this. It's very, you know, there's a lot of that goes. I mean, you have to have it. And the sound effects, there's music.
Really?
Like the production values are decent. Like it's actually not bad.
Don't they have someone just reading out the stage directions?
No,
gonna, like,
no. No, it's all worked into it organically, although Bishop does do a voiceover at one point. And there's a dramatization of the last sort of 15, 20 minutes of Aliens as well, so that you can, you know, remember what happened. But it was okay. It's a really interesting production. In retrospect, I'm not sorry they didn't make this film, because I don't think the screenplay was... Sorry, William Gibson. I don't think the screenplay was the best. But it's really interesting to listen to, especially given that they have, you know, Hicks and Bishop in there as well. Uh-huh. So I enjoyed the 2.5 hours of listening to it, but, you know... All things considered, I think maybe
not.
Okay,
so there was a question.
My question
for you
related
is,
to that was like in terms of novelizations of movies. Like, what was your go-to when you were kids? Because there must have been a point where you would read the novelization because you couldn't get into the movie because it was an 18.
No.
Because I read the novelizations of Predator, of RoboCop, because I couldn't watch the films.
Yeah, one. My parents were fairly laissez-faire about VHS. Stuff.
No, but this is theatrically, I'm saying. Theatrically, there was no way for you to get
into
Predator.
My first 18... Oh, was Bram Stoker's Dracula an 18? If it was, then it was that.
Mine was... I did see that in the cinema, but my first 18 was Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Oh, good choice. Mm. No, it's a terrible choice. I think my friends and I tried to see Basic Instinct.
Yes.
And we chickened out.
No, we tried, and my friend Dean, who I really hope is listening to this because he does listen to this podcast, literally went up and said, could I get a half the Basic Instinct, please? And they went, what? And... That didn't happen.
Yeah.
But
one to Basic Instinct, please.
It was
my friend.
Several children in an overcoat.
Yeah.
Three to Basic Instinct, but there's only one of you. Damn it.
Yeah.
Yes, I was thinking about this as you were going through your long and interminable story about the Alien 3 Audible thing. Because you mentioned how Hicks walks into the room and goes, I am walking into the room. And it reminded me of the tie-in novelization of Ghostbusters, and I may have said this in the podcast, but I've said most things in the podcast and it hasn't stopped me repeating myself, so I'm not going to start now, which is weirdly in the present tense. So whoever was writing the book, and I can't remember who wrote the book, clearly had got the screenplay and just went, oh, fuck it, I'll just transcribe it. So it's like Finkman walks into the room, and that sort of choice made my teeth itch even back then.
It's a choice.
Past tense or GTFO?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I think so I'm not saying the Reacher first person one's a present tense.
No, good. No, he's recounting them as if he's.
I'm sure some of them are present tense. Because present tense is often used in first person.
I'm telling you.
I'm not going.
No, they're all as if he's recounting them.
Oh, they're all past tense.
Yeah,
are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Including past tense, which is weirdly in the third person.
But I remember Chuck Wendig did the aftermath time, that pre.
yes,
pre-Force Awakens novel, and that was in the present tense. And I found it so discombobulating. I couldn't deal with it. I had to stop.
Yeah, I am fully on board with that. In fact, I had big problems reconciling myself with the fact that he's clearly a very talented writer and a very, very nice guy and very, very funny on Twitter, because I just couldn't get my head around the galactic awfulness of that choice. But hey, you know, it's
up to you. Each to their own
present tense. But that's not my favourite. My favourite. George Lucas is credited with the Star Wars tie-in novelisation, but I'm pretty sure he didn't actually write it himself. George Gipe wrote the Back to the Future novelisation. And here's one I've said in the Empire podcast before. I know I've said this in the Empire podcast before, but the Sean Hudson novelisation of The Terminator, because of its very eye-opening sex scene. And
Alan Dean Foster did Alien and Aliens.
He did.
And a bunch of others.
And then he wrote a couple of Han Solo books as well, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he's written everything. That man churned books.
Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
he did do that.
He wrote that.
I don't think... I didn't use them for the same purpose of, like, getting into 18s, really.
Why?
Maybe it wasn't daring enough, or they weren't just handy. I basically read all my dad's sci-fi and fantasy novels back in the day. And he did have the Star Wars novels, at least some of them. And basically, so I saw Jedi, I think, in the cinema as a very tiny person. And then eventually saw Star Wars on TV, and then had to wait like literally a couple of years to see Empire. So I was reading the books to fill those in. And certainly I was reading the books to see them again, because I was a big fan and I played with the toys at my friend Dario's house. But like, you know, we didn't have a VHS player for ages.
Was it Dario Argento?
No.
Okay.
Dario Wright. Hello, Dario. So we didn't have a VCR for ages and ages growing up. So I had to read the books to try and remember who everybody was. And it's weird seeing 3PO and R2 written out.
It's also interesting, given that the books are often written on early drafts of the screenplay, so sometimes radically different to the final film. Predator, for example, the ending is nothing like the film at all.
What happens?
He kills it with its own weapon. And it's not the shoulder caster, because it was presumably based before because obviously they shut down production halfway through and totally changed the alien design. So it's based on the original alien design, and it has a weapon, which I think was handheld, if memory serves, but this was a long time ago. It's 1987. And he shoots it with it, and I think blows up its ship at the same time.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Also, it's Jean-Claude Van Damme in the novelization, isn't it? He just keeps referring to the alien as Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yes, Chris, that's exactly what happens. It does more splits than I think we were particularly prepared for. But
has more inappropriate erections.
There is a bit when it does a really awkward salsa dance with a young Brazilian lady. But, you know, hey-ho, what are you going to do?
And then kicks back with a Coors Light.
Yeah, and then goes and does the splits across two, you know, trucks.
Ben.
Hey.
So Italian novelization, Ben, is a book that came out around the time that what we like to call a movie came out as well.
Before we had Snapchat, Ben, we used to read books for fun. So you probably don't remember these things. What is this book?
What is Snapchat, Granddad? We're past it now. We're on TikTok. and Mungbean and all kinds of new social media platforms. But they used to come out. So Harry Potter is not Italian novelization.
What?
That preceded the movie. So can you imagine such a thing?
Yeah, I never read film novelizations when I was growing up. I guess by that point, like, we had VHS and stuff, so everything that was already out was fairly readily available. But I do remember the feeling of not being able to get into stuff that you wanted to get into. I got kicked out of a cinema when I was 13 for trying to get into Kung Fu Hustle. I was desperate to see Stephen Chow's Kung Fu Hustle.
Wow.
And my brother and sister...
Two for Kung Fu Hustle, please!
So they were both over 15, and they were like, oh, we'll get the tickets, and you just go and wander around by the Pick and Mix, and then we'll all head in. And we got rumbled and got kicked out of the cinema.
Unbelievable.
I remember, especially because I was growing up reading Empire, and I was reading about all the cool films that were coming out and thinking, oh, yeah, I want to go and see that. And then waiting and hearing that things were 15s. Like, I remember finding out that Starsky and Hutch was a 15. And I was gutted about that.
Starsky and Hutch was a 15?
Starsky and Hutch was 15.
Why?
I mean, there's lots of, like, boobs and things in it.
Are there boobs?
There's swearing and boobs and things.
Are there?
There might be.
And lots of, like, weed jokes.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg's in it. There must have got to be some weed jokes.
Yeah, so I do vividly remember that feeling of being really excited about whatever was coming up. But then if it was a 15 or an 18, going, well, I'm going to have to wait, like, months and months until it's on.
It's that baby face
video shop
again.
And that's the thing. I was never, I mean, I can't even grow a beard now, let alone I was sort of 16. So
it hasn't stopped me. I'm still trying. Yeah. Plugging away. How long would it take you, seriously, if you tried?
Go on, do it now. We'll wait.
It's less time than just like coverage. It would be like small wispy bits.
Beardamus!
I've tried it.
You probably have.
Yeah,
no. You probably have. Yeah.
But thank you for claiming that you watch VHSs instead of the reality, which is probably that they were pretty much DVDs.
No, no, no. I was big on, like, all on VHS until I was about 11 or 12, I think, because I think the first DVD that I watched, I'm sorry, this is going to make you feel old. The first DVD I watched was X-Men, was the first X-Men just before X2 came out, because I won a competition in our local newspaper.
First DVD I watched was Austin Powers International Man of Mystery, which came out the year before the first X-Men. So
great choice.
You know.
Yeah, I remember being really, really excited about X-Men. I didn't see the first X-Men in the cinema, but I was really excited to see X2.
Now I feel old.
And then I won a competition in our local newspaper to get free tickets to see X-Men 2. So then we had to rent X-Men 1.
And you were like, I like this free tickets and movies thing.
Yeah.
How can I get more?
It all sprung from there, basically, yeah.
You were hooked. You were jonesing for your fix. Mm-hmm. Amazing. All right. Well, I think that's it for the question this week. Is anyone anything else to say? We're all good?
Sure.
I think so.
What's
okay,
the
good.
Worst thing you've ever done in the cinema?
What? No.
I don't know.
See, your mind automatically goes to that place, Helen.
Well,
I was
does.
Just going to say I cut into the queue horribly during The Phantom Menace and felt like really awful
that's
about
a
it for
thing.
Weeks.
That's
well,
really
no, because they've been queuing all day outside.
Hang on.
I know we got to the back of it. I couldn't
can
do
I
it.
Just, can I just put my hand over my mic here a second? Helen, you're a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
So
no, Chris, absolutely not. Whatever you're, no.
What's the statute of limitations,
Chris?
On murder?
No, just
murder. Just a. It was just a one.
There
time,
is no statute of limitations,
no statute
on,
limitations
murder.
On murder.
No, you can still be done, Chris.
Shit.
I mean, hypothetically,
manslaughter. What if it's manslaughter? What if I accidentally suffocated someone with a popcorn box?
I honestly don't know how that would work. Physically.
Well, let me show you.
No, don't. I'm just going to advise you to just not, Chris.
Just don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't confess to anything.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, okay. I'll just take my hand off the mic now.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything bad in the cinema, if I'm completely honest with you.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
Okay, good.
Nothing,
okay,
nothing
good.
At all.
No, I don't think so. No.
I thought you said something about man's laughter or something.
Man's laughter is the best sound you can hear, apart from, obviously, the barking of a young puppy or...
The screaming of the lambs.
The screaming of the lambs or the
silence of the lambs.
The soft
the lotion on the skin.
The soft beeping of a car. Anyway, if you want to have your question read out in the Emperor Pod, we got loads of questions actually in the end.
And we didn't answer any of them.
We didn't answer any of them.
Save them for next week.
We had loads of questions, including one from James Moran, the writer of Cockneys vs. Zombies, who simply said, "What is movie?" So we'll get on to that big question next week. What film would be most improved by Nick Cage playing every single role in it? These are important questions that we will answer as best we can next week. But if you do want to have your question read out in the Emperor Podcast the week after next, you can get in touch via a number of methods. We're on Twitter is at Emperor Magazine.
All the Twitters.
Or just follow me at Chris Hewitt, because I will often send out a panicked request for questions 5 minutes into the recording of a podcast. So you never know when that might happen.
In fact, follow all four of us.
Yes, follow all four of us. So principally me at Chris Hewitt. And then James is also available on Twitter. You can search him on Google.
At James
and Helen,
Sindaya.
Damn it. Helen is at... Oh, I might as well.
Helen L. O'Hara.
Helen L. O'Hara.
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
why
would you should be doing all this. And Ben, what are you?
Ben S. Travis.
Why do you all have initials in your Twitter handles?
Because there are other humans with our names.
Mm.
You can also get in touch with us on Facebook, where we're Empire Magazine, and you can email us as well, podcast@empireonline.com. All right. Our mystery guest groweth near, but I will not give away their identityeth, not yet. For now, we go straighteth into the movie news. That's what Thor would say. So what's been happening this week in the world of the movie news?
Well, surely all the big news came from the new issue of Empire Magazine, which is on sale today as we are recording this.
What?
Ooh, that's right.
That's incredible.
You must be joking.
Yes.
Jokering. Yeah.
Just because it's a world exclusive. Really gorgeous. And I say this as an, you know... Someone who's
as
made my feelings about this film.
Absolute contempt
clear.
For the rest of us.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's a really, really gorgeous cover, especially designed for us, and an incredible feature.
The
about...
subscriber's cover is amazing. Yeah. I love the subscriber.
Have you mentioned what the film is yet?
Oh, Joker.
It's Joker.
Joker.
It's Joker.
Just Joker.
Just Joker.
So,
but
yes.
Yeah, this is a massive world exclusive that you guys have worked very hard on, right? I didn't have anything
Me
to do with it.
Nothing to do with yes, nothing, I have slaved over this it. Feature. No, I've had nothing to do with it, but it's incredible. Like, all the images in there are like brand new images. These are the very first interviews with Joaquin Phoenix, with Todd Phillips, with Bradley Cooper, who's a producer on this, and Emma Tillinger-Koskoff, who's one of the other producers on it. This is the first time people are properly talking about the film, and it sounds fascinating. All of their sort of Scorsese influences, and we've been running some bits online. So Todd Phillips talking about the fact that they kind of haven't really based this on any comic stuff whatsoever, that they have written their own sort of complete new take on the Joker, which I think is really exciting. And I think is a good way to take this. It happens in every incarnation with the Joker, that it's a different take, that it's a new version, that there are certain things that stay the same, but the more playful you are with it, then the kind of more exciting that is. So if you have any interest in this film, or even if you feel kind of skeptical about this film, it's got me massively on board with it.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, fantastic. And what we should mention as well is that Empire this month has been given a bit of a facelift, a bit of a redesign. The Queer Eye guys came in and had a look at the magazine and said, that won't do. Is that what they say in the show? I don't know. I don't watch it. But
No, they're endlessly positive. It's so good.
They don't go,
cleansing.
That won't do.
No, they're like, oh, honey, you could be so much better if you just try on a red top.
Okay.
And so they take you into a room and say, we're going to talk about the deepest, darkest secret that is the root of everything that's been going wrong in your life. Yeah. And we're going to solve that in the next hour. And then everything's going to be okay.
And then Anthony's going to make guacamole with you. Oh my God, it's so good.
And while we've been doing this, Bobby has redesigned your entire house.
Your entire house.
Bobby, love it.
It's genuinely, it's the best feel-good show on TV right now.
It's the anti-2019.
It's so good.
It's feel-good to the max.
Anyway, this advert for Queer Eye is now over.
Anyway, so it's been we've had a bit of a redesign, a bit of a rejig, so there's a lot of really, really cool stuff inside the issue. Some new sections. So the new section has been rejigged, is now called Take 20, and is our take on the 20 buzziest, most happiness-est news stories of the month, with loads of great access and exclusive photographs, you know, the usual stuff. My section, the review section, has been a bit of a facelift as well, but largely been left alone in recognition of his genius. There's also a new section.
Which is the spoiler section. Now, this is carefully...
We should probably say spoiler section.
Is it not a spoiler that we've got a spoiler section?
That's what I'm saying. It's a spoiler.
You just spoiled the magazine, haven't
we? We announced that before the mag came out. So if it's been officially announced before
the trailer.
The film comes out.
See, I didn't know there was a spoiler section.
It's heavily signposted.
It's heavily signposted. But if you see a sort of bright pink page in this month's magazine and you haven't seen the film that you glimpse on that page, maybe just flick on. Keep going.
If you have, this is our chance to like
skip past the whole thing.
Just really dig into the stuff that you actually want to talk about when you've come out of seeing Spider-Man and all the things have happened and the post-credit scenes have happened and you go,
You remember that thing at the end where the thing happened and then the other thing after that thing,
which
thing was big, but then the other thing came and that was also big. We talk about both of those.
We talk about those.
Mm. They're exciting.
Yeah.
It looks great. It looks fantastic. And there's loads of great stuff inside the issue beyond the spoiler section as well. So let me see what else is in here.
Dark Crystal.
We have Dark Crystal news from that. We have a feature on the new independent movie. Independent movie? Who says that? The new independent movie, Animals. We have an interview with Gurinder Chadha, the director of Blinded by the Light, as we prepare for that movie's release. And this month's Empire 30 director is the great Jordan Peele, who sits down and has a good old chat about his approach to horror movies. And also we do an oral history of the sunken place scene from Get Out. And The Making of Jaws 2 is in there. And The Making of Jaws 2 is really fascinating because it makes The Making of Jaws 1 look like smooth sailing. And not a lot of people know that, I think, about Jaws 2. They think it was a fairly cheap and cheerful knockoff sequel, but actually it was fairly tumultuous behind the scenes.
I would go so far as to say that the story of The Making of Jaws 2 is better than Jaws 2 by some distance.
I would go with that as well. And in the review section at the back of the magazine, I mean, every page is just gold. And I won't even list what's there, largely because I've forgotten, but mainly because every page gets better and better.
There's a Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown piece.
There is, written by a woman on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
That is correct.
Written by Helen O'Hara. And it's a lot of fun, so pick it up from all good and evil news agents and enjoy it. And that's in order.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, so we have our mystery guest. Oh no, we should probably talk about actual movie news.
There was a Mulan trailer.
Ooh, yeah, looks I think exciting.
Is, yeah, it's really promising, actually.
Mm, I'm very, very excited about this one. More so than I think, which is ironic because I'm not as wild about Mulan, the animation, but I'm much more excited about the live-action version of it than most. Some of the others.
Yeah.
So that's.
I think that's because they have clearly set out that they're going to move away from the animation, do something slightly different. I mean, the story's been around more than a millennium longer than the Disney version, and there's a lot there to work with. So they don't need a dragon and songs to make this work. And I think this trailer kind of really demonstrates that. So it's beautiful looking, and I'm really excited to see it.
Looks like a big sort of epic sweeping history film as well. I think it's just exciting. I've spoken about this before, but the live action Disney stuff that I gravitate towards are the ones that have a slightly different take on the material to the animations, if that's what feels really worthwhile to me. So I was really pleased to see, as much as the animation is great and the songs are so good, I've got I'll Make a Man Out of You stuck in my head right now, and it saddens me a little bit that they won't be singing that in the film, but it seems like a really exciting direction to take this in, to do a big, take the Disney resources and tell this story on a massive scale.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly on board.
Mm. Me too.
Speaking of things I'm thoroughly on board with, Fast and the Furious 9. There was news this week that we have a bit more casting confirmed, which is that Charlize Theron is back as Cypher. And Helen Mirren will also be returning.
By popular demand.
As Magdalene Shaw.
I was so worried.
I know, right?
What if Cypher isn't in this film?
Do you think she'll turn into a good guy this time as well? Despite the fact that she, like, kills Vin Diesel's or Dominic Toretto's baby
Jason
moment last
Statham
time.
Jason Statham enters a franchise by killing one of the most beloved characters, if not the most beloved character in the franchise. Spoiler alert, by the way.
Yeah,
in
he Fast killed
6,
Han Solo.
He did kill Han Solo. Although we never see the body. We never see the body. And
that's
I think
it,
that
it
he
falls down into the Starkiller base.
It's largely consumed by flames. Yeah. I think it's one of the reasons why we don't see the body. It would be really, really horrible. I still hold out hope that he might return along with Giselle, played by Gal Gadot.
I mean, they both look pretty dead, Chris.
They have promised. Well, we don't see her body either,
I mean,
Ellen.
Yeah,
we
but
don't,
like,
you know, she falls off an airplane on the world's longest runway. And
that's true. She does.
I mean, the plane does do that sort of bump thing.
Oh, Chris. No, it's too soon. It's too soon.
I mean, because it turned out that Deckard Shaw was working under Cypher.
Yeah.
What I now want is for Han Solo to actually be alive, and he's actually evil, working above Cypher, who is now good.
Whoa.
Who has joined the team.
What? Because
what?
Letty came back evil, and she had her memory wiped.
But it turned out she was good.
Because of the power of love, you see.
Oh.
This is the ultimate proof that the Fast and Furious franchise is basically Neighbours.
Yeah, it's Days of Our Lives with cars. Like, what is happening?
It makes no sense. I love that bit where, in 7, where Paul Walker was screaming, "Cars don't fly! Cars don't fly!" And I'm like, they've already flown like 6 times this film.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about? Anyway, John Cena is also in it, which seems inevitable and right. And Justin Lin is directing once again.
But there's a serious discussion to be had here about this movie, Helen.
Is there?
Okay.
Because
Helen Mirren's presence in this movie as the matriarch of the Shaw family is interesting, given that we don't think the Shaw family is in this.
Are you sure?
Am I sure? Who knows? We shall see. But we don't think the state is in it. We don't think Vanessa Kirby is in it.
Mm.
Does that leave then Luke Evans?
Ruddy Luke Evans.
Luke Evans, isn't it? Who knows if he will turn up as, name his character,
Kane Shaw. Yeah, I don't know.
So,
what is it? It's not Deckard.
Oh, no, it's something quite like with Ian, but not Ian.
No,
Evan.
Ian was Deckard's original name. In Fast and Furious 6, he is called Ian Shaw.
Shut up.
And then by Fast and Furious 7, they realised that was a bit rubbish, so they changed
Shaw.
His name to Deckard.
But it's something.
Owen.
It's Owen.
Owen Shaw.
And when he came back in 8, he was on the plane with Jason Statham rescuing the baby.
That's
but
right.
Then you never saw him again.
That's because he goes, "I'm off. Bye, brother." And he disappears.
Does he leave the plane?
He leaves the plane.
Okay.
No, he flies the plane.
Yeah, I remember him going like, up the plane. Yeah.
Cypher leaves the plane.
He says something like, "What one man can do, another can do." And then he goes, "We're going to kill the bear." And then he leaves.
It's
extraordinary.
Okay?
Are all Welsh actors one Welsh actor?
I apologise on behalf of the Empire podcast to the nation of Wales.
Seems fair.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that he'll be back and there'll be more Shaws kicking butt. But it looks unlikely that The Rock's going to be back.
Oh, alas.
Yeah, it seems like a shame. But yeah, excited about that movie.
There was rock news, of course. Dwayne Johnson, Gal Gadot and Ryan Reynolds are making Red Notice for Netflix with Ross and Marshall Thurber in the driving seat.
AKA the man behind Dodgeball. Because if you can dodge traffic, you can dodge a ball.
That is, I mean, that's a good rule of thumb.
And why is this news? Why is this exciting? I'll tell you why it's exciting. Because this was a Universal movie up until a few days ago, and now it is a Netflix movie. And so we have the shifting paradigm of the movie industry. So Universal, the reading of the situation is that Universal perhaps thought it wasn't worth the risk, even with three very bankable stars attached. And Netflix went, yep, sure, absolutely, we'll do that.
That is weird, isn't it? I mean, like, star power should still count for something, you would have thought.
You'd think, so, right?
Yeah, so it's a choice. Anyway, we don't know much about the plot. It's a action comedy apparently set in the world of Interpol crime fighters, with Johnson as an Interpol agent and Gal Gadot as a mysterious and brilliant figure in the art world.
Yeah, sounds like the Thomas Crown Affair, but with explosions.
I mean, you've described something I'd watch. So.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm quite excited about that. I'm also excited about the fact that filming has begun on the latest Saw movie. Now, the latest reboot of Saw stars Chris Rock. And of course, he came up with the story as well. And this is not a joke. This is a film that is actually happening right now. And Darren Lynn Bousman, who directed probably the best Saw movies, certainly Saw 2, which is a belter.
Saw 1 is the best Saw movie.
No.
Yes.
Saw 2 is the best Saw movie.
No. What are you talking
Saw
about?
Saw 2. Saw
That's insane.
Two. Saw 2. Saw
You're deranged.
Two. Saw 2. Saw
is that the one two. With the swimming pool full of syringes?
Yes.
Yes.
That is not better than the first one, because the first one is like a proper kind of like tense sort of thriller, like mystery, what's happening? And then it degenerates into Gorno horror porn.
No,
this is before it gets too gory. This is when it's still focused. It's kind of, it's
Moral
much bigger
conundrums.
Than the first one, but it has less of the gore and it's still about the sort of big twist at the end.
And it has Donnie Wahlberg, so it feels like a long episode of Blue Bloods.
That's why you like it.
So that's why.
Do they have a dinner at the end where they sit and bore your tits off telling you what happened?
Hey! You take that back. You apologize to Blue Bloods right away. Anyway, it is happening right now, and it is happening with Samuel L. Jackson in the cast as well, which is huge. So, just to reiterate, let me repeat myself. There is a Saw movie coming out next year, which we think continues the story of the movies to date, that is kind of written by and stars Chris Rock and Sam Jackson. Now, we've already established that Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead is the best movie of next year, but this... we've established
best.
This. Uh-huh. This could be second best.
I have a question. Is Tobin Bell's Jigsaw canonically still alive?
Yes.
Is he died?
No, he's dead.
He's definitely dead.
I thought you meant, is he in the movie?
But it could it could be another heir to Jigsaw thing. Mm. But, time an American comedian that I remember made a horror movie, it ended up pretty great, so I'm kind of open to Chris Rock making one. Why not?
Did Rob Schneider make a movie?
I wasn't thinking of Rob Schneider. I was actually thinking Jordan Peele. You remember he's in the current
Jordan
issue.
Jordan Peele.
We talked about him literally in the last 5 minutes.
Master of horror.
I remember him.
Okay.
So, this could be awesome.
Because Rob Schneider and David Spade have made some pretty horrifying films, by the way. I think you should check them out. The Animal. Ugh. Hot Chick.
Ugh. Oh, no.
Joe Dirt. Ah. No. Terrifying stuff. Anyway, get on that. Saw 9, it's happening right now, and it is very, very exciting indeed.
There's a new sort of thing, a Star Wars. There's a Star Wars
There's
thing.
A new Star
There's
War.
There's a new Star Wars. They've revealed the Sith troopers from Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. This is a very kind of weekend before Comic-Con. Mm. Here's a thing to get you excited, and we'll reveal more about it in Hall H at some point. I mean, it's a stormtrooper that's red, but the name Sith Trooper is kind of intriguing. James and I were having a chat in the office before.
Are there only two of them?
Always two. An apprentice and a master.
An apprentice and
Always
master.
Two.
But then,
master
so who
an apprentice.
Which Sith? Is this kind of referring to the potential resurgence of Palpatine? It was hinted at in the trailers.
Ultimately, eventually, Sith happens, and that's where we are.
That's
here.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the last few years have told us.
There are spoilers for what this means available on the internet should you desire them, but
really?
I would advise not finding them.
Really?
Yes.
The Sith got real.
Yeah.
The internet is a hive of scum and villainy.
It is. If the Mos Eisley of the internet hides many spoilers.
But in spoiler-free land, we can speculate over whether that's Palpatine.
Yes.
Is Kylo Ren now a Sith Lord beyond being the leader of the First Order?
I believe this particular design was put forward by the Hasbro Syndicate, which exists within the Star Wars universe.
They like the Knights of Ren.
A little like the Knights of Ren, and they exist solely to push small figurines on unsuspecting children.
There's the Hot Toys faction, the Funko crew, as well as the Lego bots.
Yeah. Oh, so we're back in the underworld, are we, of Rogue One?
That's right.
So you're saying this is basically another case of a toy design giving us a clue as to something coming in a major film?
No, this is literally the actual reveal of the thing.
Of the thing, yeah. Okay.
So he's a big old stormtrooper in red, Imperial Guard red.
It's very blood red, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So just a couple of last things to talk about before we reveal this week's mystery guest, whose name will probably be in the blurb that comes in the show. So what the hell am I doing? Anyway, we were talking about Star Wars. There's another thing called Star Trek. Picard.
Hey.
Yeah.
New TV show which is coming. Obviously, there's a different podcast that is probably better placed to talk about this.
Better is a strong word.
Well, there's a podcast that is placed to talk about. There's a podcast. Anyway, screw him. We're going to talk about it. Star Trek Picard. They released the first poster this week. Picard and his dog.
Which is the working title for the series.
Yep. One man, one captain and his dog.
Yeah. The dog's called Number One.
Deep Space K-9.
That's adorable. Yeah. I'm just here for it. I mean, let's be honest, I was on board already. The fact that there's a nice poster has not changed my on-boardness.
Do you think William Frakes is the voice of the dog?
William Frakes?
Do you think the dog
Jonathan
is the voice?
Frakes, William Riker. Oh my God. Fantasy and the reality blend in my head. It's William Frakes. It was Commander, now Captain William Frakes. I can't do it. I can't distinguish between the man and the legend.
No.
Jonathan Frakes, William
Riker.
Or Thomas Riker, who is, of course, William Riker's identical cloned twin who joined the Marquis instead of the Federation.
Jane, can we turn James's microphone down? Is that something we can do?
It's probably safest.
It's probably for the best.
Anyway. Thomas, of course, being Commander Riker's middle name. I'm just trying to reestablish my Trek credentials.
Yes, you were
desperately,
shaking.
Desperately.
You were on shaking ground
for
a second.
I know. Had to, whew.
David's pet cat is called Spot.
It's true.
Which is funny because he's not spotty.
Ginger and has no spots.
I feel like we've somehow got off track here.
You think? Anyway, so the dog has a Starfleet insignia on his as a little name tag on his collar. It's
he's
very
so cute.
Yeah.
Do you think he's an alien like in Men in Black?
No.
No, neither do I, but no. I just wanted to get that clear.
Hey, Sean, look, how's it going out there? That's it. If anyone's accepted, listen, just throwing it out there, if you need a voice for the dog, I think, hey, Sean, look, how's it going out there? Would be a great voice.
It's possible the voice won't
voice.
Have a dog. The voice won't have a dog, the dog won't have a voice.
Are
the
you
voice
okay?
will always have a dog. It's very hot in here.
Isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
Does the dog help with the wine in some way? Is he like a
yes.
vineyard dog?
Is he like a future Sam Neill? Yeah. Is that what he's basically doing? He's doing two paddocks.
The dog is poots.
But please notice that everything about this so far has been vino themed. Like, we've had the Starfleet logo made out of vines. We've had him standing in a vineyard with a dog. I think this is a massive bait and switch, and it's just sideways in the future, and it's not actually going to be Star Trek-y at all.
I'm not drinking fucking Earl Grey.
Exactly that. Exactly that.
Again, this sounds awesome and I will totally watch it. What are the travails of a wine producer in an age of replicators, you know?
Yeah.
Can't anyone just make your wine? Why bother?
I don't believe
craft?
A replicator could do an authentic sort of 24th century Chateau Picard,
but that's the question, can it or not? did you see the in-depth criticism of the wine-themed story of Picard?
No.
That's online. Yeah, someone's gone really deep on what Chateau Picard would actually be and whether or not it would be a good wine.
What, based on where it's supposed to be set?
Yeah. And what we know from that label in the previous poster.
But there are 300 years between now
look,
and
why? That's the whole point, though, isn't it? Wine don't change, so.
But the soil changes.
Yeah.
But does it, though?
The environmental.
I don't know. I don't drink. But I'm just saying, somebody wrote a really convincing argument.
I mean, this
all
takes
wine
place
tastes
in a world
like vinegar.
Where, you know, whales saved the universe. So I think we can probably say that they know a little thing about. Yeah. You know,
they really only saved Earth.
Maybe the whales made the wine. I've no idea.
This is genuinely all wine tastes like vinegar. If you go to a wine tasting, you might as well just pour me a glass of Sarsens.
Yeah,
and I just swill it around, pretend that it smells of fig.
I'm 100% with you on that.
And tires.
Yeah, but I'm very excited about this. Despite, I have to say, the presence of Akiva Goldsman, that is a bit of a worry. Bit of a red flag. Old Akiva Goldsman,
or a red shirt.
Yes, indeed, perhaps. But still excited about this. Michael Chabon and the writing staff as well. So presumably they're to counterbalance the Akiva Goldsman-ness.
Give it a little bit of Pulitzeriness.
Michael Chabon is a massive Trekkie.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Like, massive.
Yeah, I don't think he found himself in the room by accident.
No. He beamed in, like, as part of the away team.
And just a reminder that if you want a voice for the dog, I've gone Ray Romano, but that could be fine. Hey, Jean-Luc, hey, what about some Earl Grey? Hard.
Oh, that hurts my ears.
That's the dog. My soul.
Anyway, two last things to talk about in terms of casting news and whatnot. So Millie Bobby Brown looks like she's joined the cast of Marvel's The Eternals, which is... I mean, I guess it's exciting. We don't know a lot about the film. We think that's going to change next week when they do the big Marvel Studios presentation, which we expect will be their Phase 4 presentation at Comic-Con. And we're expecting them to confirm a lot of things that are already in the works, and the likes of Black Panther 2 and Doctor Strange 2 and Captain Marvel 2 and maybe a new Spider-Man movie. Who knows what will happen? And maybe they'll announce a new Avengers film in 2024, 2025. Who knows? But very excited. Millie Bobby Brown has apparently joined the cast, which already includes Angelina Jolie, Kumail Nanjiani, and Richard Madden. Good cast.
Pretty good cast. Wasn't there Keanu Reeves?
There's rumors of Keanu Reeves and Salma Hayek as well. So this is a good cast.
Good Lord.
Derek Kolstad, who is the creator of John Wick, he's the writer of all three John Wick movies, has joined the creative team behind Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the 6-episode TV show that will be on Disney Plus. So that could be good.
That's also good news.
That could be good. But we shall find out more next week as well at Comic-Con. There'll be all sorts of news cascading out of Comic-Con as well. Mm. The Russo brothers are doing a panel there also. I think they're going to be pretty much announcing their slate at Agbo Films. All very, very cool. So, yeah, keep them peeled. Not next week's episode because that's been recorded before the panel, but the week after we'll talk about it then.
Yeah, we're not going this time.
We're not going this year. Unless someone wants to fly us out.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, just get in touch. Just get in touch.
If you have a load of money and some passes, that would be super
I'll be going
cool.
out there to do some recording for Picard.
Right.
Yeah! The dog. You know, I'll be doing that. So that'll be fun. So yeah, do get in touch if you want to fly us out to Comic-Con. And we're going to end the news section on some very, very sad news. Two great character actors left us this week. The great British character actor, Freddie Jones, who many people will remember from the likes of Krull and a lot of David Lynch movies, from The Elephant Man all the way through to Wild at Heart. And he was in Dune as well, Jimbo. You'll have loved him in Dune, no doubt. And most recently, of course, I think in Emmerdale. And he died at the age of 91. Grand old innings.
Absolutely.
And a fantastic, venerable British character actor. Did some Hammer movies as well.
And a heartfelt tribute from David Lynch.
David Lynch, indeed.
Collaboration.
He took to Twitter and said that he loved him. Tremendous, tremendous actor, as indeed was, of course, the great Rip Torn, who passed away this week at the age of 88. And again, there are a number of key signature roles that you associate with Rip Torn, who was a master of on-screen irascibility. He was fantastic in The Cincinnati Kid. He was amazing in Dodgeball, the true underdog story, as Patches O'Houlihan, who was killed by 2 tons of irony. And... has some incredible lines, which are increasingly hard to repeat in this day and age. And Artie, the producer on The Larry Sanders Show as well, said in the Men in Black films, but it is Artie on The Larry Sanders Show that I will remember him for. It's an amazing, amazing show and an amazing performance. And if you haven't seen The Larry Sanders Show with the great late Gary Shandling, go check it out as well. But I was reading up on Rip Torn. I didn't know a lot about him. And he seems to have been an absolute wild man.
Yeah, he really was.
Rip Torn sums him up in so many ways.
Wasn't it in his 80s that he was arrested for breaking into a bank at night and waving a gun around?
It wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't as long ago as you might think that story would happen.
This is true. He was a wild man, an absolute animal at times, and so much so apparently that the producers of Easy Rider felt that Jack Nicholson was a safer bet to cast in her movie than Rip Torn, which raises all sorts of questions about just what the hell Rip Torn was doing back in the 1960s. But he was an incredible guy with an incredible name, not... Mm-hmm. His given name, you may be surprised to know. But he was fantastic. The great Rip Torn, who passed away this week at the age of 88. Okay, time now for this week's guest. And you may remember, if anyone listened to last week's show, that we hadn't booked a guest for this week.
Well, that seems unprofessional of us.
It seems unprofessional. It was an oversight.
Mm-hmm.
Happens occasionally. Sometimes certain things will happen. Certain schedules won't align in certain ways and you won't have a guest. I seem to remember around about this time last year, we had to run a little excerpt of the Chris McQuarrie Mission Impossible Fallout Spoiler Special interview in lieu of a guest, because we never want to have an Empire podcast that doesn't have a guest.
Because quite frankly, we're just not enough.
No, we're not enough. We want to deliver for you guys as well. So out came the old Rolodexes, and I got as far as C for Corin Hardy. Corin Hardy answered the call, and he's an old friend of the podcast and has been on the show a couple of times. Most recently, of course, on our live show last year at King's Place. In fact, as part of the London Podcast Festival, tickets are available right now for this year's show. And he's recently been doing some filming. He's been directing some episodes of the Gareth Evans created TV show Gangs of London, which is all very, very kind of exciting. And he has just wrapped that show. He's just wrapped that show. He's just wrapped directing the last episode. So I said to him, hey, do you want to come in and, you know, have a bit of a chat in the podcast? And he said, yes.
Hurrah.
So here's the thing. Hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
So I don't know what we're talking about.
Cool.
So it might be fun.
It'll be fun.
So here you go. Me talking to Corin Hardy, the director of The Hallow, the director of The Nun, the director of upcoming episodes of Gangs of London, about whatever pops into her head. Do please enjoy. And again, thank you to Corin Hardy. Enjoy. Delighted to be joined in the Empire podcast by Corin Hardy, returning to the podcast.
Yeah, the return.
The triumphant return of Corin Hardy. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very relieved and excited and happy.
Because you just rapped.
Literally just rapped what is, well, I mean, I've been working on Gangs of London since November last year. Still doing post now, just starting sort of proper post, but we've just finished the final episode shooting.
Wow.
3-4 days ago.
Okay. How's that feel for you? Because I don't think we've ever had a director in here who has literally just wrapped a film or a TV show. But every time I have spoken to directors who say that they've been working on stuff, and the minute that they hit wrap, their body just kind of goes, ugh. The immune system just gets amped up, fights off all these little invaders, and then suddenly it's bedlam.
Normally that's the case, and this has been, I mean, it's the first TV show I've ever done,
yeah.
So it's a different type of schedule. And I also did 3 episodes back to back, then went into editing, then did a final episode, which I just finished, so... It's a sort of, and also I just got a real kind of rush of, maybe I'm going to go down at the weekend, but I had a real rush of satisfaction out of completing it that I'm riding on at the moment. It's the wrap party this evening, so I'm going to keep strong till at least tomorrow morning.
So this is the wrap party for the entire show or the wrap party for this episode?
It's a wrap party for the whole show. So myself, Gareth Evans, Xavier Gens, the crew of like a couple of hundred crew
and
cast. Epic.
Amazing. And what are rap parties usually like? What can you tell us about rap parties?
I quite enjoyed them. I mean,
what do you remember of them?
When I wrapped The Hallow, it was particularly special because we were all in Ireland, and that was a proper like absolute.
They still
mayhem.
Speak of it in legend.
Yeah. Well, actually, the producers got my band secretly over, so they turned up on the last sort of night of the shoot. And then we ended up playing. I don't know if the crew appreciated or not, but we ended up playing a drunken set. Everyone got obliterated, and then we ended up in this. I do remember this. We all got on a minibus, and there was at least 50 too many people crammed on a minibus that was only meant for sort of 24 people. Had about 70 on, whizzing through the night down a black Irish road to some other location, and it was. I remember just thinking, we are going to die.
Do you think maybe you did, and everything since has been a dream?
Maybe that's what it is. All my dreams came true. Yeah.
I'm the gatekeeper. I'm here to usher you into the next life.
I'm gonna wake up from it, or I'll still be on a bus. bus
heading towards a tree.
Yeah,
Death Bus, is that the name of your new film? Have you?
Yeah,
is
it,
you here to announce that?
It's like Final Destination on a bus in Ireland. Yeah.
I am here for that. I'm absolutely here for Death Bus. It's interesting because you don't really, I mean, you've just wrapped Gangs of London, but that doesn't come out until next year, really.
Yeah.
So you don't really have anything to plug.
In my mind, I've got lots to plug, but no, I'm just here for chat to you, Chris, and your Michael Keaton Batman t-shirt.
Yep, and you're here with a t-shirt for, which is promoting another podcast, Corin, so I have to call you out on
the
your
Boo Crew.
Oh, for the love of God, here we go. Yep, the Boo Crew. So tell people about the Boo Crew.
You could team up with them.
I've never listened to the Boo Crew. I've got to check it out.
They're a horror podcast set based in Los Angeles, and Tim Armstrong of the band Rancid does talks on them, and they invited me on a while back on The Nun. But it's a great t-shirt. Look, I'm not a monster, you're the monster. I stand by that.
Yeah. I have to point out, though, the I'm, and I'm not a monster. Really? There's no apostrophe.
Yeah, I'll have it fixed, and I'll come back with that.
Yeah, in fact, sort of that. Because at the moment, that means instant message, not a monster, you're the monster.
Right.
I'm just being a pedant, but what can you do?
I actually put this on thinking, I think Chris will dig a Frankenstein t-shirt. and then you pointed out podcast.
So. I pointed out a grammatical inaccuracy, and it's promoting a rival podcast.
I'm going to go and get changed.
That's the thing, this beautiful thing about podcasts. There are no rivals. We're all in it together.
They're doing really well, though, podcasts, I hear.
They're doing okay, yeah. I've yet to see any financial reward for it. But
right. But everyone seems to be doing them.
Everyone is doing them, which is, you know, my next question. Why aren't you doing one? Sounds to me. I mean, you're a busy guy. You've got your own pursuits, but...
I don't know. I wouldn't know where to start. I've got too many other things taking up my brain.
Mm.
But stories to tell, you know.
What's taking up your brain at the moment? What's happening? Because here's the thing. The Nun came out last year. This is the last time you're on the podcast. Was that live show we did in London at the London Podcast Festival?
Yes.
Which is a podcast festival in London, in case people don't know. The Nun was just about to come out.
Right.
Came out, did pretty well. Mm. I think it did pretty well. Mm. It was 100 and something million in the States.
I don't know. The total was 363.
I don't know.
That's all I remember. 0.7.
I mean, that's not quibble about things. And obviously, of that, you get 10%. So thank you for coming in here in your gold-plated Ferrari this morning.
yeah, I got a scooter, like I said.
You got a scooter, but you know, it hasn't arrived yet.
That's my treat to myself. So that's it, yeah.
Is that it?
Mm.
From that sweet, those fat stacks of Nun Benjamins.
Nun Benjamins. A little electric scooter. Yeah.
That doesn't seem like Hollywood excess to me, a scooter.
It's my excess. Yeah. It's my allowance.
But never go above the speed limit. Otherwise,
it's
maybe.
It's pretty fast. I haven't been on it yet, but I think it goes 18 miles an hour.
Okay. So could you do Death Scooter? Could you do a movie where there is. Either a scooter is killing people, like Christine.
Yep.
Or you've dangerously overloaded the scooter. You have I'm pitching stuff to you
what
now.
What was
you've
that Corey Haim movie, Roller Boys? It could be Scooter Boys.
It could be that. With a said.
Dance of the Roller Boys.
Yes. I like that. So you get four people on the one scooter.
Sounds awful. I hate the idea. Sorry. It's just dreadful. Sorry. No, I mean, it came out of my mouth. And
No. So it's totally fine. I mean, the honest reason I called you in here today was because I wanted to pitch stuff to you, you're about to take it out of here.
Give me a pitch then.
That's all I have. That's literally all I have. I have Death Scooter.
Let's go with Death Bus.
Well, that's your project. But the interesting thing is, after The Nun came out and made all those big fat stacks of Nun Benjamins, that the first thing you do is, and it's an amazing TV show. It's working with Gareth Evans, and as you said, Xavier Gans is on the show as well. And I'm really, really excited about seeing the sort of mayhem you guys have cooked up, because you and Gareth have been sharing lots of images on Instagram over the last few months of
little sneaky peeks.
There's a lot of blood in there, and I've been speaking to both you guys a little bit about it, and it sounds pretty violent and pretty awesome, but at the same time, it is a TV show, and that's an interesting choice for you to have made after The Nun. Where I imagine you A, have a lot of projects you want to get off the ground yourself, and B, you probably have people knocking down your door going, "Do this." It's like The Nun.
Mm.
It's a priest, but it's a scary priest.
Yeah.
But you've chosen to do this instead.
Yeah, it was sort of unexpected in some ways. I mean, it came out of a kind of gradual relationship with Gareth that we'd had, maybe as I'd sort of been a fan of his movies. You know how these days you start following someone on Instagram or something, and then you notice they follow you back. That gives you license to go, hey, nice one. And then you share your Blu-ray collection pictures, and then they sort of add up. And at some point, actually, it was during prepping The Crow when I thought, you know what, I really want to chat with that man, Gareth Evans, because he does... He's made the best action in recent cinema.
Yeah.
So we got together for a chat, and he told me about gangs that he was planning. And also was on a search for a writer, and I had recommended a writer that I'd worked with, funnily enough, on The Crow. And she ended up working on gangs. Mm-hmm. And then he said, you know, maybe if you're done with The Crow, you come and direct an episode. And then he stuck to his word. So when I came, when The Crow went down the second time, I was, he was like, I'm still up for it. We're about to get into sort of pre-production. And so I was just like, you know what? It's in England and I've not done a TV show. And also, it sounds awesome. Mm. And it was definitely a step out of my comfort zone. And I won't say too much about it at the moment because we're not sort of,
yeah, of course, we're not
going,
yeah,
into it. But yeah, it was a sort of the biggest challenge in a lot of ways. And maybe that's why I feel really proud, because it felt like a real little bit adult. But we shouldn't say too much, but it was definitely a real like, let's give this a go. And I've got way more out of it than I yeah, ever thought I could. And working with Gareth and working with Xavier and myself has been a real sort of camaraderie team. We all share the similar kind of aesthetics, yeah, but in different ways. So it's been, and the crew and the cast have just been so top, hard working, top of their game. So it's just been a real brilliant experience.
So you're obviously a big horror guy. That's fair to say. But you're also a big action guy as well. Is that,
yeah,
that's something people don't, absolutely, necessarily know about you?
Yeah. I mean, action, crime, sci-fi, horror genre, and
rom-coms.
Yeah. No, I love a good rom-com too. And I think also like a lot of the movies that I like in those genres have a lot of emotion in them as well. And this project has, yeah, a real mix of like emotion and action and mystery and crime. Yeah. And yeah,
amazing. I can't wait. But there's a time and a place for talking about that, yeah, in detail. Yeah, yeah. And that will be sometime next year. Hopefully we'll get you and Gareth both on, yeah, the show, and we can get into it. But post The Nun.
Yeah.
Comes out, makes $363,745,821.45, but no one's counting.
Yes.
Who's keeping tally, honestly? And what happens then? What is your door being knocked down? I mean, you've talked in the past about projects you want to get, mm-hmm, off the ground.
No, I've got a number of projects which I'm juggling that are, I'm now just sort of like getting prioritizing, because, mm-hmm, I was meant to do episodes 2, 3, 4 on gangs, mm-hmm, and then I would have been available a little earlier. But they asked me to do the final episode, which was unexpected and a bit of an honour. So I did that, and it's meant I've had to hold back a few things that are lying in wait. So, yeah, there's some horror on its way.
There's Abominable, which has been knocking around for a while, and I can't wait to see eventually happen. Any updates on that?
There's monsters and horror in a lot of these next dreams. Yeah, it's difficult because when you it's such a kind of constant long process of getting movies made and developed, so you always have a number of projects, but it's difficult to talk about any of them specifically until you're doing one of them. Then you can talk about it,
I guess. Also as well, over the years, because I think I don't even remember this, but the first time we spoke actually was about Abominable years ago.
Yeah. I think I spoke to you on the phone about it when I'd originally got Sam Raimi.
That's right.
Doing it.
And, that's right.
And I think you were at 16 then. And you said, keep in touch. We're still talking about it, but yeah.
We're still talking about it, precisely. And that, and
it's still an absolute dream of to do this.
Yeah. So it's kind of got close to the starting line a few times, and you know, not to delve into areas that are too painful, but obviously you mentioned The Crow. Mm. You know, which got really close to starting line on two separate occasions. So, in a way, have you been burned by talking about things that are kind of ephemeral? And
no, not burned. It's just it's more just that you really want to. You know, everyone wants to tell the truth and talk about the things that are really happening. And it's such a long, drawn out process. And things sometimes feel like they're happening and then they don't. Or so it's nice to when you've actually made one or in your mid process of making it. And you know, you have so many different ideas and projects, and you're constantly in touch with the people who are developing them. You just can't talk about them.
Mm. No, that's fair.
It's really annoying.
Listen, when you're ready to talk about them, by all means, get in touch with the book.
How do other people do it? I mean, what about the... I already got it. They would know about it.
Oh, no, it's fine. You're constantly texting them. Guys, you won't believe what's happening with my next project.
What do other people say, though? What do other directors say when you talk about projects?
Projects? Future projects? Mm. I don't know. It's kind of... it depends, really. Obviously, you get some who are circumspect, some who are bound by... those dreadful NDA things, and they can't say anything about them. But I just find it, you know, I'm just interested to see what happened after the Nun. I imagine that you had lots of people just throwing knockoff scripts your way, and
you get scripts, and then you have the amount of time that you're trying to divide up between the things you need, want to do, what you want to develop. So getting to read other scripts becomes a lot more like. You don't want to just read any old script. So it becomes like much more targeted of what you're trying to go for. And there's definitely some very exciting projects that have come out of the back of the Nun. So, and like I said, Gangs was sort of something which I felt, you know, let's just have a bit of a break and do something different. And also like with someone like Gareth and do something that I'd never done before, which was really exciting.
So what's your viewpoint of the state of horror at the moment?
It seems to be very healthy.
It does, doesn't it?
I've got a list of movies that I actually haven't seen that I'm desperate to see, because actually being in production, you just haven't had time to see anything. So I still haven't seen Us.
You haven't seen Us?
Obviously, Midsummer, I can't wait to see it. I wanted to see it last night, but I was too tired. I still haven't seen Child's Play, Brightburn, Pet Sematary.
Oh my God.
Don't Die is coming out. I still haven't seen Suspiria.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm so behind.
Have you seen In Fabric? Add In Fabric to your list as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's not necessarily a horror per se, but it is a belter.
Right, right.
It's literally a belter because it's about a dress.
That's my list of movies I haven't yet seen.
Oh my God. Let's see. This is terrifying. I'm going to read some of these.
This is what happens when you're actually doing stuff. You can't get to see anything.
The Nun. You haven't seen The Nun yet. No. you should check it out.
Edgar invited me to see Midsummer with Joe Cornish the other night, and I really wanted to see it. And it was in the middle of my shoot. And it's in the middle of his shoot.
How can he find time to see it?
It was like a private screening he'd organised.
Very nice. Yeah. Okay, wow. Okay, so it's a 2.5 hour film. So
maybe just put everything on standby. Or,
maybe his film's going really, really well. The interesting one in here is, Dumbo.
Yeah.
Why is Dumbo on your list?
Tim Burton and I saw that trailer and I thought, oh man, that looks... I love the way that looked. So I'm still holding a flame for it.
All right, okay.
Despite other reviews and things.
Girl in the Spider's Web.
Duskin probably like 3 years old by now, but
yeah, that came out last year.
Still like I must see that film still.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna recommend some films here for you as well. Sorry to bother you. Brilliant, yeah. Black Klansman. Have you not seen Black Klansman?
Because do you not do this? I mean, it's different for you, but like there's films where I'm like, got to see that film. Write it down, and then I don't know. You know, I just. They slip by.
Well, the one film that's on this list that's not out yet, you'll be delighted to know, is Knives Out.
Right. Yeah,
which I'm massively excited about.
Yeah, me too.
Massively excited about.
Really cool.
All right. Well, you got a lot of stuff to get going on.
The movies I have seen is like 6.
Is that the films you've seen this year?
No. Movies that I can remember that I enjoyed.
All right. Okay, this. Got to read out Karen's list. Widows.
That's like 2 years ago now.
Endgame. Kid Who Would Be King. Missing Link, you know, I didn't see Missing Link.
Didn't see that one. It's a Yeti movie, man.
Yeah.
You actually brilliant. And it should get much more mentions, Missing Link.
Came and went, sadly. How to Train Your Dragon 3, Creed 2, Overlord. I really liked Overlord. Yeah. Had a lot of good stuff going for it. Free Solo, great stuff. Mandy, yep. And if Beale Street Could Talk. Well,
that was great.
That's an eclectic mix.
Yeah,
and I love that. I love that you're keeping lists. Is that something that you've done throughout your life?
Yes, but also as you just get older and more forgetful, you're like, what have I been seeing recently?
All right, so here's a pitch for you. See if you can take on another co-writer here.
Okay.
All right, so this is a series of movies.
Mm-hmm.
First one is called Debit Card. All right, so it's
Debit
Card. So instead of credit card, it's Debit Card, and it's a credit card that kills you.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
It sounds kind of quite up to date.
Okay.
I recently had a credit card that nearly killed me just because I couldn't figure out how to pay it off. I mean, actually to physically get through to someone to do the payments on it.
Yeah.
Does it physically, is it like carry with a credit card? It just sort of like slides across the table and slits your wrists?
It's very much inspired by In Fabric.
You can't
have seen the film, but it's essentially it's a dress that kills you. So I'm figuring that maybe a credit card that kills you. And also it's a comment on society. Obviously.
Yeah.
That's very, people like that sort of stuff. They like subtext. So,
what's the second one?
Second one is Lethal Tender. Mm-hmm. So it's Debit Card 2, or is it Lethal Tender? Is Lethal Tender the first one? Oh, yeah, okay, I messed it up. Lethal Tender is the first one.
Right.
Lethal Tender is about money that kills you. So, you know, paper cuts from £5 notes, all that sort of stuff. So that's...
Is that the sequel?
No. Well, it could be the sequel. You know, you could
Why have you got such a thing against, like, money that kills you?
When you earn so little of it, you begin to fear it, I guess. So Lethal Tender, then you go Lethal Tender 2, Debit Card, right? Mm. So that's credit card that kills you. And then the trilogy comes to a harrowing end in Lethal Tender 3, Gorgage, which is
amazing.
a mortgage that kills you.
Christ. Yeah. It sounds like this is, should be sort of some kind of advertising campaign. I don't know what for. Anti-credit cards and...
Yep.
Wow. Well, yep. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, can I
I was going to say, when do we start?
Yeah.
I'm ready to go.
I'll think about it. It's been really great talking to you about your ideas, Chris. Yeah. So,
well, you know, anytime, Corin. Yeah. Anytime you want to come in, anytime. I'll have a list of terrible films. We can start.
I was hoping Lethal Tender was going to be more of like a buddy cop money flick.
See, now you're going in a direction that people might actually want to watch.
Mm. Like it could be animated. It could be like the money could be characters. It could be a family man character and like a cop who's gone kind of deranged.
I think this may be the next Aardman movie in a weird way. Yeah, the £20 note, the £50 note, lording it over everyone else. You know,
that's simple. Good.
Oh, you could have a coppers. Anyway, let's not do this. So one thing that I want to finish off by talking about is we tried, and your schedule worked against it ultimately, we tried to get you in when we did that John Carpenter Rankin episode.
Oh, yeah.
To talk about through the films of John Carpenter, because we wanted to talk about The Thing in particular.
Mm.
Is that the apex of horror for you? Is that it?
Is it the apex of horror?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely the greatest film ever made. I was just watching that John Carpenter interview on someone I put on Facebook last night. Interviewed John Carpenter about Hollywood and his film careers, and still I cannot actually comprehend that people didn't like The Thing, the critics didn't like The Thing, the fans didn't like The Thing when it came out, and how much that must have affected him.
Yeah.
If it was a terrible movie, fair enough, but it's such a great movie.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, it looks like he always sort of bristles whenever he's asked about it, and it's just such a great movie. And when you know how difficult movies are to get made, and how difficult that movie must have been, it's just shocking. But yeah, no, I think it's just such a brilliant, powerful, solid piece of work.
Have you talked to him about it? Have you met him, haven't you?
No, I did meet him backstage at one of his gigs, and had that proper starstruck awe thing that you get with people you genuinely are in awe of, and I'm sort of useless at talking to them. I had the same thing with Nick Cave. And just sort of shook his hand and smiled, and he was nice. I was with a band called Gunship who'd managed to get John Carpenter to do a voiceover on one of their tracks. Right. And I also did a little track with them this year called Cthulhu as well.
Yes.
And so we all went and met him. But no, I couldn't talk about his movies. It would be too much. But I have since, because I was really wanting to do that John Carpenter top 5 or top 10.
Top 10, yeah.
And I got like a top 15 and I was trying to whittle it down, and it was so difficult to me, like months trying to figure out what that order should be. So what orders did you get in the end?
Hang on a second.
I've got my list.
Let's find your list and then I'll find, oh shit, hang on, let me take a look.
I did write this quote down that John Carpenter said yesterday. They asked him like about what advice would you give to someone.
Yeah,
that's sort of standard last question in an interview. And I thought what he said was brilliant. He said, don't lose yourself. No matter what happens, keep in touch with who you are and when you start. because a lot of things happen to you from the success and failure, both. Don't lose yourself through those. Stay in touch with who you are. I thought, what a great thing to say.
Bloody hell, yeah.
Look, here's my, after talking to you, so I've got John Carpenter to top 10, order of making them. Then I've got Corin's top 10. Then I got need to rewatch. Then I got Dave's top 10.
Who's Dave? Who's Dave?
Dave's my best friend, and you know, I had to check with him what his was. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, we got to get you and Dave back in. We got to redo the John Carpenter ranking.
I was really wanting to do it, but I did. There was things like, I hadn't watched Elvis, Vampires, Starman, Dark Star, Mouth of Madness for so long, so I couldn't like factor them in.
I rewatched a few of those in preparation for this. I rewatched Vampires, and it did not trouble my top 10. I mean, there's some interesting stuff he does there, but
I remember being really at the time excited and seeing it and having a sort of feeling of like, not what I was hoping, and still bought it and still. And now I'm sort of like, maybe it's great.
Still for me, the last great one is Prince of Darkness. But anyway, I'll just run through the top 10. This is our official top 10, and we'll finish off with your top 10.
Yeah, okay, right.
So top 10, number 10, Christine.
Yeah.
And I think I was largely responsible for that being in the top 10. I love that
good
film.
Good. Yeah.
Number 9, Starman. Number 8, and I was responsible for this being in the top 10, Prince of Darkness. If it were up to me, it would be much further up the list. Yeah. Number 7, Les Liv.
Yeah.
Number 6, Dark Star. Number 5, Escape from New York. And basically, number 5 is basically you hit into number 5 and then it's just like the all-time classic.
It's just which order, though. It's
just which order.
That's what got me.
So Escape from New York. Number 4, The Fog. Number 3, Assault in Precinct 13. Number 2, Halloween. Number 1, The Thing.
Right. But you didn't have Big Trouble in Little China.
We didn't have Big Trouble in Little China.
In the top 10?
Yeah.
No. That's
in
insane.
In fact,
that's rubbish.
I'm looking at the top 10s here. Wait a second.
Why is that?
Why is that? Hang on a second.
I mean, that's crazy.
I'm looking through everyone's top tens here. So Dan Jolin, Vodafone. I'm not a Big Trouble in Little China fan.
Wow.
It got 6 points. It got 6 points, which meant it was even below In the Mouth of Madness, would you believe?
Wow.
But that's based off a recent rewatch for me where it didn't click with me the way it did when I was a kid.
I rewatched it and love it. It's in my top 5.
All right, okay. All right, that's an argument for another podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Right. No, but then I have to still caveat this with the ones that I need to rewatch, I haven't put in my top 10 because I didn't know where to put them. So I haven't put Darman or Dark Star in there.
All right.
So maybe that helped give some space to some others, but... And this is just, you know, this is just a version of a top 10.
You're caveating so much. You're caveating so much.
So I got number 10, but with 3 stars either side, because I want to check it out again. It's Mouth of Madness.
Yep, okay.
Number 9, Christine.
Yep.
Number 8, They Live.
Yep.
Number 7, Prince of Darkness.
Again, much too low, but okay.
Yeah. Number 6, Assault and Precinct 13.
Ooh.
This is where it will probably get controversial.
Okay.
Because this top 5...
It's Memoirs of an Invisible Man next.
Yeah, number 5, The Ward. Not really.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Sorry. No. So, number 5, Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I will accept that it holds a place in many Carpenter fans.
I love that film.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was when I watched that film, it was the perfect time to watch it. And I wanted to be a ninja and I loved horror movies and it was everything. Mm. And I watched it recently and I still felt the same.
I maybe need to go revisit it.
Number, what did I get to?
4.
So Escape from New York.
Yep. Solid.
Number 3, The Fog.
Yeah. I mean, that's an old timer.
Number 2. Halloween.
You can't come on here and say The Thing is the greatest movie ever made and then put it the number 2 on your list.
There we go.
Halloween.
And do you know what? I even wore a t-shirt this morning that was The Thing and then I changed it for this one.
Because you wanted to give a shout out to the Boo Crew.
I thought it's probably too like obvious to wear a Thing t-shirt to meet Chris Hewitt on a podcast. But you think about what t-shirt you wear in the morning, don't you?
You do, a little bit. Although this was, what was it? It was a choice between this and an Iron Man t-shirt. It was just opened the drawer and there was an Iron Man t-shirt and then underneath was the Keaton one.
Did you last watch Batman? Keaton?
This one? Long time ago, I think.
Because that's just an anniversary, isn't
it? A couple of years at least, easily. 30 years old this year.
I really want to watch that again. You know, my dad's cousin designed Batman, the production designer Anton Furst.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So he designed that amazing
Your dad's cousin?
Line. Yeah.
Wow, did you ever meet him?
But he sadly died.
Very soon after, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
But But no, I mean, he did obviously Full Metal Jacket and Batman Company of Wolves. And actually, when we shot some of Gangs of London, we shot at a location that they used in Full Metal Jacket. So it was quite... he transformed, I think, Saigon.
Or the Docklands, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's amazing. That I did not know. Mm. Well, love to talk about that.
I did go to the set and got in Pinewood, the Gotham set.
Really?
And after the film had been made and saw it all, because they kept it up for quite a long time.
They did, because they thought they were going to shoot a Batman 2, what became Batman Returns, I guess. I'm not sure. Did that shoot in Pinewood?
I don't think so.
Yeah, because they kept the sets up for a while, and they started to melt.
Yeah.
As I recall.
Yeah.
Under the sun. Oh, man. That's something to get into the next time.
Yeah.
You sally forth across Regent's Park and come on the podcast.
Can't wait.
Wearing the T-shirt promoting another pod. Yeah, on your scooter. Throwing out great big fat stacks of Nun Benjamins to people and passers-by.
Where does this Nun Benjamins thing come from?
You know, that's what you say. You go, I want none more cash. How much more cash do I want? None.
Brilliant.
And on that note...
Loads of money. Oh my God, when someone said that.
On that note, it is a fond farewell. And thank you so much again for coming in to the director of Lethal Tender, Lethal Tender 2, Dead Card, and Lethal Tender 3, Gorgage.
And Death Bus.
And don't forget Death Scooter. No. Death Bus. Corin Hardy. It's been amazing, man. Cheers. Thanks.
Never see you again. Cheers.
Oh, pleasure, man. Okay, so that was Corin Hardy saying some pretty incendiary things that we may have to redact. Ugh, the guy was running his mouth off. Let's now get on to the review section of the show, and we're going to start with Jim Jarmusch's all-star zombie flick. I never thought I'd say those words. Jim Jarmusch's all-star zombie flick. Then again, he did an all-star vampire flick.
You know?
He did Ghost Dog Where the Samurai.
Yep.
Why not? Why not do a zombie flick?
He's got range.
He did has a Western. Got range. Yes, he did. Dead Man. And so, here we are, Jim Jarmusch's The Dead Don't Die, which stars the likes of Adam Driver and Bill Murray and Tilda Swinton and Selena Gomez.
The RZA from Wu-Tang
yeah.
Clan.
Yeah. Who else? Iggy Pop is in it, yep.
There's Tom Waits
for No Man.
Steve Buscemi.
Oh my God.
Danny Glover. Yeah, it's got it going on.
It has got it going on.
Did we say Adam Driver?
We did say Adam Driver.
Did we say Adam Driver saying ghouls?
Ghouls.
Ghouls.
We didn't.
Chloe Sevigny. And of course. Tilda.
I said that.
Okay, carry on.
But she deserves to be said twice,
deserve to be said twice.
Tilda Swinton.
She plays a mortician. A Scottish mortician.
A Scottish mortician.
Or is
mortician.
She?
Well, who knows? Anyway. The Dead Don't Die.
Hello. So we're in the small town of Centerville and strange things are happening. The sun seems to be setting later than it should. Everything seems to be off. Animals are disappearing. Nobody quite knows why any of this is happening. And the sheriff, who's played by Bill Murray, and his two deputies, Chloe Sevigny and Adam Driver, are perturbed, concerned even, and trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. But this is a Jim Jarmusch zombie movie. So at the same time that the world is going to pot, it's also kind of just like nothing's happening and everyone's kind of not sure and just kind of, you know, talking about other stuff because it's a Jim Jarmusch movie and people are still drinking coffee in diners. So it's a very atypical zombie movie and it's an odd Jim Jarmusch movie, if I'm perfectly honest with you. I'm a huge, huge fan of his. I loved Patterson, which is the film where less stuff happens than you think it should be possible to make a film about. Genuinely, like there's so like it's almost like a negative things happen if you were trying to write it down, but it's delightful. And it's so good to see him working with basically everybody he's ever worked with in his career in this film and some people he hadn't. But it is an odd fit. And I think some of the ideas in this movie that are presented as if new and quite clever have been done a very long time ago by George Romero. So sometimes it's not quite as sharp as you want it to be or as current as you want it to be.
A bit laid back, isn't it?
Yeah. And laid back is what we expect from Jim Jarmusch. So you can't complain too much. But at the same time, it's an odd film and it gets progressively much odder in the last act to the point where people are going to throw their hands up in fury at it, I think, in some cases, at some of the rather more unusual twists and turns that the story takes just before the end. I just kind of liked it because I just kind of like Jim Jarmusch films and I just kind of go with them and sort of think, okay, yeah, this is going to be weird and that's cool. And it is both weird and cool. But people have said it's his worst film and Honestly, I would struggle to argue. That? People on the internet,
who
you know, man, people.
That?
I don't know.
Have they seen Broken Flowers?
Yeah, that's probably fair. But it's definitely not in his among his best. It's no Only Lovers Left Alive. It's no Patterson. Yep. But it's just still kind of charmingly weird. So I still had a good time with it.
Charmingly weird sounds like a Jim Jarmusch joint to me.
Right? Definitely. Mm.
So 3 stars in. That's a recommendation, as we always send the podcast, for Jim Jarmusch's The Dead Don't Die. And it's a horror film of sorts. And now we come to a real horror film, as in one designed to make you scared. Annabelle Comes Home, which is the third part in the Annabelle trilogy. This is interesting because Annabelle was a spin-off from the Conjuring movies, right? Mm-hmm. But has hit the trilogy mark before the Conjuring.
It has, yeah, because the Conjuring 3 is not quite in production yet, I don't
think. It is in production.
It's in production
now.
It
is in production. It is happening right now.
This is the most sort of Conjuring centric of the Annabelle films, because Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are the sort of central figures of the Conjuring films, are in this. It's set in their house.
So they can't not be in it. It'd be a bit weird if they weren't in it.
It would be very weird if they weren't in it. But they're a kind of minor part of this. So the previous two Annabelle films have been kind of prequels, introducing the doll, where it came from, all that kind of stuff. This one is set when the Warrens, so that's Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, bring the doll back to their house and put it in the cabinet in the room of spooky things.
Which then, seems like a bad idea. Can I just say, like, a really
like
bad,
a bad
idea.
I mean, the glass they use is like anointed chapel glass. They're very careful about how they put it away. But then they're not very careful about going away for a couple of days and leaving their daughter in the care of a babysitter who is very, actually a bit of a goody two-shoes and very sensible, but who has a not-so-sensible friend who comes round and accidentally through things, Annabelle is set loose.
No.
And as we know, she is a beacon for other spirits. And she's in the room full of spooky things.
So, the room where it happens.
The room where it happens. Is that what that song's about? No,
it is. It's part of the Conjuring universe.
It is. Wow.
Hamilton is a prequel to The Conjuring. Did you know guys not know
Miranda
that?
Is a genius.
He really is.
So yeah, this one stars McKenna Grace as Judy. She's the daughter of the Warrens. She's kind of starting to get her own awakening of, like, oh, she's seeing things.
Does she see dead people, basically?
Yeah, she sees a spooky priest. And there are lots of kind of generic spooky things in this. So you've got a spooky priest, you've got stabby bride, you've got my favourite one is the Hellhound of Essex, which is maybe my new favourite myth.
Isn't that the dog from Picard?
No, it's from Supernatural.
Oh, okay.
So for me, I really liked the second Annabelle film, Annabelle Creation, which was David F. Sandberg, who did Shazam earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And I thought that actually, for a very straight down the line horror film, had a good sense of style, and it fit into that nice Conjuring thing of having these lovely big sweeping shots. It did this great thing at the start where it goes round the spooky house in this big sweeping shot and shows you all the spooky corners and kind of really talks to the audience and says, ooh, you know there's going to be some spooky stuff and we're going to have fun with this. Annabelle Comes Home didn't quite have that for me, and I think I found that disappointing because it has the most fun setup. It's the spooky doll set loose in the spooky house full of spooky things. It should be a big funhouse blast.
It's kind of Goosebumps, but yeah, scarier.
It
right?
is, and it does fall on that kind of lower age range of the Conjuring stuff. It's like, it's definitely not as scary as the main Conjuring films. It has some nice sort of sleepover horror elements, and I like that when you have people like Blumhouse and like the Conjuring universe making these films that is like, if you're a teenager and everyone's round at a sleepover, you're going to stick it on and all kind of be a bit freaked out. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of board game thing in this called Feely Meely, which is like a big box with holes in that you have to put your arm in.
No.
And deal with whatever's
I've
in
seen
the box.
Flash Gordon. Ain't happening.
It sounds to me like almost everything is being set up as a possible spin-off. It's hey guys, you want to play a game of Feely Meely? And then there'd be a film called Feely Meely.
Yeah. Did you like The Nun? You'll love The Priest.
Do you like Stabby Bride? Coming 2021.
I'd say the biggest thing around that is that there's something called the Ferryman, who is the sort of creepiest, scariest thing in the film, but they play a lot into that mythology of this weird
Paddy Considine play.
Yeah.
I believe it was scripted by who's the fancy playwright who wrote that?
Jez Butterworth, I believe, wasn't
Jez
it?
Butterworth.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So yes, that is part of the Conjuring universe, as we've now
Whoa.
Found out. No, this is something different. This is a weird kind of evil thing with coins for eyes who drops coins everywhere.
He yells, Paddy Considine!
No, I get it. Yeah,
maybe.
Don't.
Maybe.
No.
So that's kind of all right. But I don't know, the film just lacks energy and invention and a sense of playfulness for me.
And this is directed by Gary Dauberman, who wrote the previous movies and The Nun.
Yeah, this is his first film as director. And for me, again, it doesn't have that sort of great fun filmmaking that leans into those scares in the way that some of the last Annabelle film did. So it's not a total write-off. I think if you are invested in the Conjuring films, you might want to take a look. But for me, it wasn't up to scratch with the better Conjuring films.
So 5 stars then for Annabelle Comes Home.
A couple less than that.
A couple less? Did we give three or two?
Two.
Two?
Two.
2 stars.
Sorry, not quite a recommendation.
2 stars then. 2 stars for Annabelle Comes Home. Wow. Better hope Annabelle doesn't find out, otherwise we're all in trouble. Let's talk about something a little bit more positive now. Let's talk about Pavarotti.
Yes. Hurrah. This is the Ron Howard documentary about the great opera singer. It's really good just because apart from anything else, you get to listen to the best bits. It's like, which is your favorite Pavarotti album? I would have to say the best of Pavarotti. This is that.
The one with the 3 tenors on it.
The 3 tenors are on it. It's great.
Oh, brilliant.
And literally the other two were talking about him and what made him so special. And they have lots of opera experts and opera singers talking about what it was that made Pavarotti sort of stick out from the crowd. Not just, well, his voice, for one, and that he had just that clarity and that tone and that sense of drama, but also just his personality and that showed through, and that he was able to kind of popularize opera in a way that really nobody else previously had. So it's really affectionate look. It has all of his family and friends, it seems like, on board. I mean, the colliery of that is that you have a sense that, you know, some of the more awkward bits of his history, like the fact that he was chronically unfaithful to his wife, have been rather brushed over. Mm. They are there, but they're not exactly emphasized.
Are they nessun dormant?
Very good. Yeah, they kind of are.
Name one other Pavarotti song.
La Donna Mobile, obviously.
Not you.
Nessun Dorma 2. Nessun Dormia.
I can't either.
Anyway, he's great. But no, it's a really, really good look through his career. And the music is astonishing, even if you're not an opera fan, I think. And yeah, like I say, it's affectionate rather than sort of hard hitting. This is not going to blow the doors off, you know, the reputation of Pavarotti. But it's just so likeable and so feel good. And I would also recommend staying through the credits because there is a bit of performance in the credits that is super good.
Nick Fury.
Nick Fury turns up and asks him to join.
We are putting together a team of tenors.
It's you. It's Susan Boyle.
She's not a tenor. Come on.
Who are the other? Name more opera singers.
Who were the 3 tenors? Come on, Helen. Name
okay.
them.
Let me have a go. Okay. Let me have a go. Luciano Pavarotti.
Yes.
Placido Domingo.
Very good. And his fellow Spaniard,
Enrico Palazzo.
Enrico Palazzo is the right answer.
Enrique Iglesias.
Of course, yeah. Jose Carreras.
Jose Carreras was the name that was on the tip of my Wikipedia page. Wow.
Yeah.
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
That's pretty good.
Meatloaf said that.
Mm.
And 3 tenors is a recommendation.
Yes, we gave this 3 tenors out of a possible 5 tenors. But as we always say on the Empire Opera podcast, that is indeed a recommendation. And just very, very quickly this week, there are a couple of other movies out. Probably the film of the week, weirdly, sadly, is one we haven't seen yet. But we gave it 4 stars, and it is the British romantic drama Only You, which stars Lea Costa and Josh O'Connor, who, of course, will soon be big old lugs himself, Prince Charles, in The Crown Season 3. So that's very, very exciting. Apparently that is fantastic. I haven't seen it yet myself, so apologies for that. But 4 stars then for Only You. And also, Al, very, very quickly, we have Stuber, which promised a lot, but it seems to deliver little.
Yeah, it's a sad one, this, because it's a great cast. So you've got Dave Bautista as a tough cop who's going after a bad guy played by Iko Uwais. And the problem is, just when he gets the lead on his location, he's just had LASIK eye surgery. right? So he can't drive himself. And he tries, it doesn't go well. So he has to get an Uber driver, who's played by Kumail Nanjiani, to drive him around seeking out the clues to this guy's location.
Right.
There's a couple of problems here, which is, I mean, first of all, if you took a drink every time it said Uber, you would be stocious in no time. It is appalling product placement. And also, like, the fact that basically Nanjiani puts himself in all these incredibly scary and increasingly risky positions just to get a 5-star rating. It's a really bleak commentary on the gig economy, if you think about it for any length of time. Mm. Another problem is that they cast Iko Uwais, of course, the star of The Raid and The Raid 2, and then give him no real action to do. There's one fight early on with Dave Bautista, and it's cut to ribbons, so you don't even get the sense of how that works, which is a shame, because they are both capable guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was disappointing. It's kind of up and down. I laughed a bit, so it wasn't a total loss. It was kind of a high 2 for me, but it was a 2. It's not quite 3 stars.
I know they needed the sort of Uber producty stuff for the name Stuber, but then they could have called it Lolateral. No, just me.
I mean, thank God it's the end of the podcast, because I think you've ruined it.
I mean, did people just not get it? Lolateral.
Why not collateral lol?
Collateral lol.
Because then you've already got the ol at the start of the word, the lol lateral.
No.
Okay.
Whew.
2 stars then for Stuber. And that is it for this week's Empire Podcast.
Ooh.
You'll be delighted to know. And join us next week for more film-related fun, when we'll be joined by, I think we have a guest.
Is it Beyonce?
It's not 100% confirmed. It's Beyonce adjacent. It is Jon Favreau, who is the director of Beyonce in The Lion King.
Hurrah.
How exciting. And as he said in The Lion King, it's a whole new world. And I'm very excited about seeing what Favs has cooked up for us with The Lion King.
Favs cooking.
Which brings us back to Chef. Oh no, we could be here all day. But anyway, until we meet again, until the auspicious occasion, it is goodbye from Ben Travis.
Goodbye.
It is goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
It is goodbye from James Dyer.
Bye-bye.
And it's goodbye from me. I am off to down a yard of butterbeer. Type 4 diabetes. I'm coming for you. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye.